I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, grayer still in Turin and Barcelona. We're going to get in all that. We're going to get into so much because we've had match day five of the Champions League. So much late drama, so many events, so many storylines. I think we need to start with a game that turned out to be a dead rubber because Inter beat Victoria Pilsen earlier. But I think it's still very, very significant. Because we had Barcelona playing Bayern. Barcelona knew they were eliminated. They knew they were going for the Europa League. But you still had a full house. You had Bayern at home. Bayern know they're going to top the group come what may. And I kind of feel like what we saw is significant. Because Bayern went out, played like they always do, and they won 3-0. Barcelona, I thought, were disappointing.
Yeah, very underwhelming from Xavi's tactics, who was completely outdone by Nagelsmann's tactics, and too predictable, very much so, to individual performances as well. You know, it's okay, you've got a game plan set by your manager, but you can also individually play well, play better. I think from Dembele to Lewandowski to Koundé, let's not even go into Bellerin and Marcos Alonso and all of that. It was bad, or very average. I guess it shows where the two teams are right now, even if you would expect more from Barcelona.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we're not in the dressing room. We know the mentality, and we know how gutting it is when you lose motivation, right? Yeah. But you should still have a motivation to make a statement. If not, and I would have had no problem had Xavi done this, once you see the other results, say, that team sheet, let me take that back.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm starting 11 Pablo Torres.
But then you don't want to lose even like 10-0 against Bayern Munich at home, though.
Yeah, but you play the kids, whatever. Here's a glimpse of the future. You know, but I'm saying is you don't have that.
Yeah.
Here, the players know if they tried hard, right? So they know, all right, we tried hard in a game where really we had no pressure in terms of result, and we still got our backsides handed to us 3-0. I think that is a blow.
Yeah, I agree with you. And they can go back on, and they've done already. Matteo Alemanni came out after the game saying, oh, the refereeing in Milan was so bad, that cost us. Okay, the injuries have cost us. Yeah, fair enough. I think that's made Xavi's life more difficult, especially defensively. But overall, I don't think you can be surprised by Bayern being so much better than this Barca team.
Right.
And then Inter, I think it was very much 50-50, and in the end, they got up.
We were talking earlier about off-air about Xavi and Nagelsmann, right? Two young players. The difference being Nagelsmann is like 10 years experience almost, and Xavi does not. Did that show?
Yeah, completely. I mean, we can go back. Barca had a very good game against Athletic Club de Bilbao at the weekend in the league, which is great, and Athletic are a good team.
Although they're a good team that's been playing really badly after starting well.
And I've got nothing against something that worked. You try to reproduce it the next game. However, Bayern are not Athletic Club, and they're a much better team. So you want to do the high press as you did in the first game against Bayern, where you played really well the first half and you should have been in front. This time, Bayern had prepared so well. Their plan to beat your press, and you were too predictable. They played long. Why would you want Koundé to almost man-mark Choupo-Moting the whole time? Because you know that if Choupo goes on the side of Marcos Alonso, then you're in big, big trouble. The problem is that kept Koundé out of position all the time, leaving big space. Mane on the first goal has acres of space. Gnabry all game long, Musiala as well. It was too predictable, I thought, from Xavi.
They got caught out with quick passes. By the way, no, why would you man-mark Choupo-Moting? Because the man is a beast.
Yeah, true.
Five goals in, what, four games?
Yeah, incredible.
He's in fuego, man. What are you going to do?
In fuego.
We're going to talk about, you can't help but talk about the impact of this financially. I posted, and it's an incredibly complicated document, I posted the official calculations of how the Champions League prize money will be distributed. It's very relevant in terms of Barcelona because obviously this is the year that they pulled the levers. They went all in on growth and whatever. It will have an impact. I think it's going to end up being between 30 and 50 million, but honestly, it could be more, it could be less. It depends on how they do in the Europa League. It depends on how Real Madrid does in the Champions League. It depends on a whole bunch of factors. If you want to know why, go and check it out. But the bottom line is that this is a serious blow. Yeah. You know, the guy gambled and they took a hit, and between the 40 million that they're not getting in TV rights and this, you're 80 million down already.
Yeah, it's bad.
Something like that.
It's the second season in a row, of course, that you go down to the Europa League. I think for your own image and your own standing, this is not good. at all. And Laporta can say, oh, don't worry, we will compensate with a new sponsor. The new sponsor will cover... Okay, but this is not the point here. Yeah, of course, you can have new sponsors even if you qualify for the Champions League, even if you win the Champions League.
You see, the problem is...
This is not how you resolve this kind of issue.
When you mortgage your future... It's not about compensating. It's about growing. Yeah. That's why you borrow money so you can grow. It's not about compensating.
That's very true.
The problem is, I mean, you know my views on Laporta. But ultimately, he's Mr. Brightside, right?
Yeah.
It's always positive with a guy.
Yeah.
Jules, I want to get into this a little bit more about the financial impact. And we don't have all the pieces. We can't give you exact numbers. But guess what? Neither does Laporta, right?
Yeah.
So just a reminder, those levers that he pulled, he sold off chunks of the club that generate money for
them.
Right. So from the TV deal to Barca Studios. So with the idea being that we're going to grow, we're going to generate even more money. So even though the percentage, you know, we've sold a fixed percentage, but even though, to use the words of a previous prime minister here, a very recent prime minister in the UK, we're just going to keep growing the pie, right? And so it's fine that we're going to use that money to invest and so on, right? I think people get that concept.
Yeah.
I think unless you're Nostradamus, you can't say for certain it's going to succeed, it's going to fail. You can't assess the risk. And many, including us, said, wait a minute, this is a totally unnecessary risk.
Yeah.
The immediate impact now, I think, you know, what is it going to be? I think one of the impacts is simply Barcelona in the Europa League, they're not going to be in the Champions League. They're going to get less exposure.
Yeah.
Less exposure means that when you go and you go to sponsors and stuff, you're going to get less money. I don't think it's going to be tremendous.
No, because they'll be back next season for sure.
They'll be back in the Champions League. But the problem is, you know, it's one of those things like Bruges are in the Champions League every year too, right?
Yeah.
So it's not just a question of being there and being in the latter stages, it's being able, like, do we look like a rising power that, you know, sponsors, especially in this is the other thing. I think, you know, we can all read the newspaper, right? There's a global recession right now. There's cash is drying up, right?
Yeah.
So sponsors want to jump in on something that, get in early on something they think is going to grow. So the minute you kind of lose that idea of growth, it becomes that much harder.
Yeah.
And the reason I said... people said, oh, you're for austerity. But the reason I was against this in the summer, I would have said, no, just Kessie, you know, Christensen, you know, maybe sell somebody, but try to grow with the kids rather than go and spend all this money and pull the levers, is that growth is growth. So if you're growing from a lower position, it's easier, right? The way Barcelona went in, how are they going to grow? They would have had to, you know, reach the Champions League final or semifinal or whatever. So that makes that part that much harder.
Yeah, definitely. And they owe still some money to some of their players, including Frankie de Jong, who deferred their wages through the pandemic, et cetera, which will be costly. And then, as long as I'm all up for growing and everything, as long as you see progression on the pitch with what your manager is doing, what your players are doing, et cetera, which at times we've seen, and at times it's a bit more difficult to see where this team is going. I still think that Xavi should still stay there until the end of the season. And what you do next season, depending on the next few months now. But that's where I've got an issue with, is where is this team heading? I still think that Xavi could be a very good coach. But like we mentioned earlier, I think Nagelsmann showed his weaknesses, showed his flaws, showed maybe that he's just not ready yet to be one of the top. And if he's not one of the top, then it would take more time for Barca to go back to the top.
I want to talk more about Xavi because I think, you know, there's a complex discussion to be had there. But before that, before we move on to that, just to close out the financial bit of this, because a lot of people have asked, does this mean that they won't be able to strengthen the team in January?
Yeah.
I think there's still money there because they sold those chunks for a lot of money. Mm. So if they were to double down and do it and address certain positions where they feel they need to, I personally hope they don't, because... This, to me, it would just be silly at this stage. What are you going to do? It's like to increase your chances of winning La Liga. That's, it may bring you prestige, but it's not going to move the needle financially doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Given the way Laporta's operated until now, you know, I would imagine he's running around with a list of right backs and left backs, and maybe a central defender. But if they do have to sell, the saleable assets, the ones that are going to get you a ton of money, are obviously your young players.
Yeah.
It's Pedri, it's Gavi
and De Jong.
I would say Ansu Fati.
Yeah, as well.
But De Jong's slightly different. De Jong is on a huge salary.
True.
So I don't think, yeah, if De Jong is a good World Cup or if he plays well for Barcelona, you know, I think, but you'll get 50, 60 million for De Jong probably. But I don't think it's somebody who's really going to make you, and then you need to replace him, right? Yeah. I don't think he's in the same angle as Pedri, Gavi, and Ansu. I wouldn't sell Pedri, Gavi, and Ansu unless I really, really had to.
Yeah, unless you have to.
And especially with Ansu, obviously, I want to see him on the pitch more.
Yeah.
Going back to Xavi, perfect transition with Ansu Fati. I think the number is now, like, I think he's played in like 20 games in a row for Barcelona, right? But
only started a few times.
He's only started twice, yeah, I think, twice, or maybe three times. Just going back to last season. What?
And when he started, he's done well.
What's the issue here? When he's come on, he's done well.
Yeah, and when he's come on, he's done well.
What's the problem? Why does he... Why aren't people talking about this?
I know. We said that the other day, didn't we, after the Clásico. I really thought he was going to start, I have to say, on Wednesday. I was convinced he would start. I was convinced that... that Pedri would play in midfield and not so much wide as he did in the first half. I don't know if there's an issue because they are super cautious because there's risk and they have all the data medically on his fitness. So maybe something
it's
we don't
know. It's been 6 months since he's been back.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he's a bit scared as well to go back in after being out for so long. I don't know, but there must be something because I don't get it.
In terms of Xavi, I think, like, I'm biased. I really, really like Xavi.
Yeah.
What I struggle with when I say this team is not very well put together in what they did in the summer, and we've talked about it, you know, Dembele and Rafinha essentially playing the same position, so you got to move one out of... Did you even need to sign Rafinha once you've signed Dembele or vice versa?
Yeah.
And obviously the fullback situation and decisions like playing Marcos Alonso last night. Now,
I mean...
It means Eric Garcia doesn't play.
Yeah, true.
So that's good.
That's good.
But equally, you know, how do you find yourself in this situation? Obviously, Xavi was a big part of the summer spend. But again, I feel from the outside, we don't know where Xavi ends and other people begin.
Yeah.
And we're not going to know until later. We don't want to have this, like, you know, this is very unhealthy. Well, there was a club signing, it was a manager signing, whatever. That's very unhealthy.
Yeah.
But I take a step back. I know Xavi's a football man. I don't know that he would have gone and made all these signings himself. I kind of refuse. Am I being too idealistic about Xavi?
I agree with you. And I think Xavi will know how to build a squad, I would think. I think Xavi will know exactly what he needs to play the football that he wants, to implement all his ideas. And I think that if you look at this squad and how it's been built, there's clear flaws in there, and I would think that a manager like Xavi, even lacking a bit of experience at that kind of level, would know, hang on, I need this profile and that profile, and in that position I need something a bit different. I already have this, I already have that. What's the point of having, you know, those two similar players? That kind of stuff, which clearly doesn't seem to have been addressed in the summer.
Well, yeah, or things like, do I need three left backs?
For example. But I think they have to... I would want to believe that they will trust him. I think they should trust him. I think he deserves 100% until the end of the season and see where they are. But he's making mistakes, and some mistakes are basic mistakes. I'm sorry, but we go again. It was too predictable against Bayern. It was too easy for Nagelsmann, even before the game started, to know exactly what Xavi would do without the ball, like in Munich, with the ball, like against Bilbao. Too easy to counter, too easy to find a solution to. And then what was maybe the most surprising is that Xavi on the touchline, seeing that first half unfolding, going 1-0 down after 10 minutes, but you could already have been 1-0 down, by the way, and not really adjusting to it, not changing anything. Yeah. At that time, it was pretty clear that Pedri had to come a bit more in the heart of the game and find space there instead of staying wide where he was, and that the build-up structure didn't work the way that Barca tried to build up. So I was disappointed by that.
I think we need to show some more love for Bayern.
Yeah.
Because let's not forget, this is a team that, you know, went out there and they were without Manuel Neuer,
yeah,
Leroy Sané, you know, Thomas Muller started on the bench, came on, but obviously he, you know, he had spent time away, so he's not fully fit.
Lucas Hernandez,
and Kingsley Coman, right? So, yeah, obviously Lucas Hernandez as well. I mean, that is a lot of players to spot the opposition, but I just really want to focus on, because I think Muller, Sané, and Neuer are automatic choices in this Bayern team right now, right? So you take three starters out, and then obviously Barcelona were without Araujo. Fair enough, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of absentees, Bayern were the more weakened team.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think there's any question there.
No, but they have a better squad overall.
But obviously they have a better squad. But also to go out there and play that same way without those key men, that's a real testament to the job that Nagelsmann is doing.
Yeah.
I know you probably approve of his dress sense in this game, sort of the more minimalist black T-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. You know, beige chinos, it's fine.
What impressed me was the back four. I think this back four, Upamecano and De Ligt together, they were criticized earlier this year, individual errors, so on. And people often do this, oh, we've got two very tall guys, can they work together?
Yeah.
I think they've been really good the last four or five games that they've played together.
Yeah.
I like Bayern a lot better with the attacking fullback, so Davies and Mazraoui, I think, is a special player.
Yeah, yeah. He will improve and he will get better tactically as well. But yeah,
defensively, you still got issues with him.
Yeah. But it's fine. It's fine. This is not where his forte is. So I'm happy with that. As long as there's cover, I think Upamecano can cover. I think Kimmich can cover as well. So I don't have a problem. I much prefer Mazraoui at right back than Pavard, Stanisic, anybody else.
Being anti-French again.
No, it's not that.
Nah,
someone pointed out to us on Twitter last night, didn't we, how fitter De Ligt looks now to the Juventus. I'm not really sure if it's that obvious, but certainly, and he almost gave away a penalty, Lewandowski.
Whoa. Almost gave away.
Well, no, it was a bit, could have been clumsy, but it was not a pen.
Lewandowski gets in front of him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Lewandowski is one of the greatest forwards in the world.
If not
the best center forward in the world. I don't know. And I mean, I thought he did well to get to the ball. When you're beaten like that, let him run past you or you try to go for the ball.
De Ligt has that in him. We've seen it in the league. We saw that against Stuttgart. We saw that in many games with Bayern in the Bundesliga as well, that he still has, at times, these little moments where he's not so sure if he needs to go or not and maybe makes a mistake. But they look so good. The Gnabry assist on the Mane goal is exceptional, and I don't think enough has been made on that pass. He scored a lovely goal that was disallowed for offside, rightly so, but I thought Gnabry looked sharp in a rare game. Well, not rare game, but because there's so much competition in those wide places that he had to play well, I think. But yeah, Bayern were very impressive.
So we were asked on our Champions League talking points last night. You weren't a part of it this week. It was me, Mark Ogden, and Sam Marsden. You know, who the favorites were on current form. Mm. And it was funny. Ogden kind of went a little tirade. It's worth checking out because it is kind of vintage Augie. He says, like, current form doesn't matter. It matters how good you are in March and April.
All right, okay.
Which is true, right?
Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, if the Champions League final were next week, I would really like Napoli's chances.
Yeah.
Given that I know that it's in March and April, and I think other teams are going to get better.
Yeah.
This is his logic to say, like, he picked Liverpool, for example, because he thinks Liverpool will be better in April. But in terms of the best teams that we've seen in the competition thus far, is it, for me, I'll tell you, so far, the best teams we've seen are Bayern, Napoli, Manchester, I'm not going in order, Manchester City.
Yeah.
And then I think you would add, as potential winners, I'm very comfortable adding Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, and I would stick Liverpool in there for the only reason, just the ingredients, right?
Yeah.
Salah on the break, the shutdown keeper, whatever.
Yeah.
Are you with that? Am I missing anybody out?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there could always be a dark horse somewhere, but I don't think so. And I think the fact that Juve, Atleti, Barca, all out already, I think shows that for the bigger boys, you know, I think, and especially the teams that are going to finish top of their group, which would be the strongest ones, there's a road there for the quarterfinal where we could have an incredible quarterfinals with the top eight, the really strongest top eight in Europe right now, which could, I think, be very, very promising. You could easily have a
before City Arsenal Napoli. Fans get upset. The strongest, you mean the strongest top eight that are in the competition,
yeah, in the Champions
right?
League,
obviously, Arsenal can't be
because
they're not in the Champions League. Not this season. By the way, for those keeping score at home, people love to see this. Five of the Super League 12 are not, won't be paying in the round of 16.
That's right.
Could become six if Tottenham get knocked out as well.
That's true.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Plenty of VAR controversy last night, Jules, but let's start with another Liga side dropping out.
Wow.
That crazy ending against Bayer Leverkusen cost Atletico Madrid a place in the knockout round.
Yeah, incredible. Clément Turpin, the French referee, blowing the final whistle. The game is over. It's 2-2. Atletico are out, and then he gets a call. There's a VAR call on a handball on the corner, which was the last kick of the game just before that. So he goes to the screen, gives the penalty. The whole Metropolitano explodes.
Which, by the way, you're allowed to do unless the teams have left the field. VAR can call them back.
Exactly. Yeah. So who takes the ball? Do you think Griezmann maybe? It's not Griezmann, it's Carrasco. After the game, El Cholo said, well, I told Carrasco to take it because Griezmann was tired. If you look at the stats, Carrasco had run more than Griezmann through the game.
But maybe Carrasco has better stamina. What does it matter?
Maybe. Anyway.
Carrasco, what kind of logic is this?
I'm just saying. He's tired, but he's run more. I'm just saying. Okay, fair enough.
Excuse me. If me and a marathon runner go and like run for half an hour, the marathon runner will probably cover more ground than me.
That's a good point.
I'll be more tired.
I was just pointing out that Carrasco had run more.
Yes, I am Griezmann, and the marathoner is Carrasco. Okay.
Carrasco looked stressed, tensed while waiting for him to take his pen. Radetzky saves it, the ball comes back, Saúl Ñíguez heads it on the bar, the ball comes back, Reinildo takes a shot, the ball is going in, but Carrasco blocks the ball and the ball comes out and it's the end. Incredible drama.
What a night for Carrasco. But hey, Jules,
he didn't deserve to go through anyway.
They didn't, and they're playing a Bayer Leverkusen team that's obviously had a really rocky start under our boy Xabi Alonso. Over the course of the five games, they don't deserve to go through. I think simple time.
Antonio Conte was furious, Gab, after Harry Kane's late goal was disallowed against Sporting for offside. It meant that they drew 1-1 and now have to avoid defeat in Marseille next week in match day 6 to advance. Does he have a point, Conte?
On the decision?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
They drew the lines.
Much as I love. Like, no, this is semi-automatic line. It's one thing if you're going to go and argue, and that's when he said he didn't complain. Well, what if it had been another team? Would they have had the courage to intervene? These are machines you're talking to.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's kind of like getting angry at like your television because it doesn't work, you know, or shouting at the moon. Like, you're not talking about a human being who made a decision.
Yeah.
Look, he's wound up. Sometimes when he's wound up, he lets himself down. I think this was one of those occasions.
Mm.
But the late goal decision aside, Jules, what did you make of Spurs' performance? Booed off at halftime. But it's now three games without a win in all competitions, two of those at home. Yeah. They did have chances in the second half, mostly through Dyer, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately for them. Horrible first half, horrendous. I thought pathetic for a team like that.
And he played Lucas Moura in the front three. So we thought maybe the problem is 3-5-2, go back to 3-4-3. No.
Yeah, no, not even that. Second half a bit better. I mean, especially on set pieces, that's how they scored their goal. And that's how they created the most chances. They go back to 1-1 with 10 minutes to go, and what does Conte do? He takes Lucas Moura off and bring on MS and Royal, which didn't really understand that either. It's a disappointing result. It's a disappointing performance. Harry Kane, until the goal, had literally nothing, no service. Heung-min Son, hardly much more. I'm worried for Conte and Spurs.
So
I really am.
The stock answer that Conte lovers give, as you know, is that he works hands-on with the players on the training pitch because of this crazily congested schedule. He doesn't have to do it. He has to do everything off video.
How long has he been in charge now? How long has he been in charge?
11 months.
Has he had a full preseason training camp, for example?
Yes, he has.
So now you tell me after 11 months, he can't still implement his ideas because he's got no time to work between matches?
I think he needs to do better. I think he knows he needs to do better. And I think he's angry with himself, first and foremost.
I agree. Jurgen Klopp tinkers with his formation again. We see the 4-4-2 diamonds. And Liverpool beat Ajax 3-0 to seal their place in the round of 16. Gab, your thoughts?
My thoughts is that there's a lot of parallel between this game and the Rangers game, with the difference that Liverpool were better than they were against Rangers. And what I mean is this: they go away from home, the other team attacks them, they create chances, they hit the post almost straight away. They're at sixes and sevens. Tadic has that incredible chance.
They could have been 2-0 down, Liverpool.
Yeah, the one which, like, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold is looking. He's not even, he's looking, he's got his back to him.
Nothing
his,
about
the
it.
The ball hits him off his back. But then, you know, there's something to be said for quality and class. And how about Jordan Henderson, who we've been critical of?
Yeah.
That little bat. You like that Techers, that special Techers.
Yeah.
You were not expecting that from Jordan Henderson.
No, to be fair, big mistake by Sanchez, right back for Ajax, but still.
Big mistake by the goalkeeper, too.
And he's 55
the two
years
central
old.
Defenders, what, do they forget that Mohamed Salah is there? But the pass stands.
But still, the pass and the finish, great.
And Darwin Nunez also horrible miss, but then obviously he made up for it. So look, you keep rolling.
Did you like the diamond? Did you like Firmino as a 10 behind Salah?
I think it's more, it's a position he played earlier in his career. It's a more natural thing. I'm not 100% about Salah being, if Salah has the freedom to go wide when he so chooses, because Salah cutting in at that angle is devastating. Salah from a more central position is just a different sort of player.
Yeah.
You know, as long as he doesn't mess with his freedom, I think it's okay. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. What's that coming over the hill? It's more quick hits.
Yes.
We knew Juventus were on their way out of the Champions League, but Jules, we didn't think it would come via such a horrendous performance against Benfica. Do not let the 4-3 scoreline fool you. Those first 70 minutes were an absolute horror show. Yeah. Credit Benfica, but blame Juve.
Yeah, completely. I mean, until the keys came on for Juve and kind of salvaged the game a little bit towards the end.
Ealing Jr., remember the name, Ealing former Jr., Chelsea star, Sule England Youth International.
All of that, but before that, it was a disaster class from Juventus again. Benfica could have easily been 5-1 up, 6-1 up. Rafa Silva could have had 3-4. It was too open, too easy, too much intensity that Juve could not match. It's worrying again, but we've been saying it since the start of the season, so I don't know where you go from there. They might not even make it to the Europa League, to be fair, because Maccabi can, PSG can beat them, and then Maccabi somehow maybe could get something against Benfica, so terrible.
Allegri didn't reel off the list of absentees on this one. I think the only one that's really significant, in the sense it wasn't there before, is Bremer.
Yeah, fair enough.
For a while. But he says that, ooh, this is good because, you know, not this is good, but, you know, he said, I'm angry and ashamed, but, you know, we're going to learn from this. What's he going to learn?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing. He learned that he's not good enough anymore.
I think he's had a lot of time. So he's had a lot of opportunities to learn. Big time. That one.
And Gab, some might say that this humiliation that we just explained was not even the worst thing that happened to Juve on Tuesday, because prosecutors accused the club of false accounting and alleged those pay cuts and deferral players took during the pandemic weren't really quite pay cuts.
No, so, and by the way, this is an investigation that's, you know, they've been on trial for this
through for a while,
Sporting Justice, but this is criminal justice, right? Because Juventus are listed on the stock exchange, so they have certain transparency requirements. The allegation that's being made, which Juve denied, is that essentially when they had to, during COVID, when the players said, all right, we're going to give up 3 months' salary, 2 months' salary, whatever it is, that the club said, okay, fine, but we will pay you later. Right, you're not really taking a pay cut.
Well,
and they had some other private funds that they were going to use to pay the players, including supposedly $20 million to Cristiano Ronaldo. There's going to be a full investigation. The false accounting, inflating player transfer values, I think that's really hard to prove one way or the other. This is a lot easier to prove if it actually happened. And, you know, Juventus have every right to put their case forward. I just want to say this. If the players came out during the pandemic, during a time when people were dying, when businesses were going bust, when the whole world was turned upside down, and they said, yeah, Juve, okay, we'll take the pay cut, but you're still going to pay us. I hope that public opinion will be as angry at the players as they are against Juve.
Yeah.
Right? Because obviously it's rule-breaking and whatever, and they'll be punished if found guilty.
Yeah.
But that is really, really low. I'm going to pretend to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
What are we talking about here? Right? That's what makes this allegation so serious. And it can't just be Juve who's in the dock for this one, if proven.
That's true.
Showtime at the Parc des Princes, Jules, as the M&M run riot against Maccabi Haifa.
Yes, baby. What a performance. I know it was only Maccabi Haifa, and they're a good team, but they're not very good, let's be honest. However, the M&M was on fire. Mbappe, Neymar, Messi together, goals, assists, little backheels, little... Oh, it was so good. I'm enjoying it till it lasts, because soon, in the last 16, we will be knocked out, as we know already. Chelsea are through as group winners, Gab, after beating Salzburg 2-1. Did you like the Christian Pulisic, Raheem Sterling wing-back partnership?
No,
the right,
I don't.
One on the left? I don't think they did either.
I don't think they enjoyed it. I know obviously why he had to do it. There's Reece James and blah, blah, blah. I like the fact that he's getting creative and he's getting original with this. I thought Chelsea had periods where they played really well. Although in the end, you know, the difference was this ridiculous goal by Kai Havertz, right? Yeah. Look, this is a work in progress. Chelsea tweeted out, like, you know, like the WWWDDW, you know, to show that, like, he's an official account. And I'm like, I'm sorry, who did you play in that time period? Because other than the two games against Milan where Chelsea played really well, the only other serious team they played were Manchester United, and they drew at home and did not play well.
No, and they were outplayed at times.
Other games against Brent, you know, this is not the time to gloat. This is the time to sit back and let Graham Potter do his job, because it's not just about results. It's about performances, too, especially with Graham Potter. He's not where they want him to be, and I'm fine with that. He needs time to work. He needs time to work, and I think he'll get there. And if you want to experiment with this stuff, that's fine. I have no problem with it. It's not his fault. You're this horrendously put-together team.
I'm with you.
Erling Haaland's return to Dortmund proved to be rather anticlimactic as Borussia and City battled to a scoreless tie and Riyad Mahrez misses yet another penalty. But I guess it doesn't really matter. Everybody's happy except for Haaland, maybe, who appears to be injured.
Yeah, seems to pick up a foot injury. Pep wasn't too happy by the penalty miss again. That's the 25th penalty missed by City since Guardiola arrived. 25 out of 80. This is massive. This is big.
And you would think with Haaland and Gundogan.
De Bruyne and I mean, they're all like, wow, psychologically is there a problem? They need to sort that out. But in the end, they topped the group. That's all they wanted. We touched on this earlier, Gab. Barcelona were out anyway because Inter beat Viktoria Plzeň, winning 4-0.
And Gab, Romelu Lukaku is back and scores.
It was so nice to see him come back on the pitch. Big Rom. He gives Inter another dimension.
Of course.
Brozovic will be back too at some point, so I'm told. First half hour, when Inter missed a couple chances.
I know.
This is when, you know, tension was there. Bum time, as Sir Alex used to say. Yeah. And I'm like, are they going to screw this up? No, again? They didn't. They're more grown up. Mickey sending them on their way. Bastoni, phenomenal. Oh, Di Marco, I thought, exceptional on the wing as well. So big, big win. Good for them.
Yeah.
Emotional night in Leipzig, Jules. Just a few days after the passing of club patron Dietrich Mateschitz, they beat Real Madrid 3-2, becoming the first team this season to defeat Carletto's crew.
Yeah, they played really well. You're right. Very emotional. Great tribute, to be fair. Great homage.
Yeah. There's a lot that I personally don't like about this man's organization they've done. But it's also true that without him, these things wouldn't exist.
Exactly. The atmosphere was great as well. Marco Rosa very happy the way his team played, and rightly so. And Nkunku, again, fantastic. Great start of the game. It was a Real Madrid team without Modric, without Benzema. So there was a few changes and stuff made by Carletto. But still, very, very significant win for Leipzig. Milan beats up Zagreb 4-0 away, and it's now all about avoiding defeat at home to Salzburg in match day 6 to qualify.
It was funny. This is important because you had to bounce back from the emotional damage of those two Chelsea games. I think they showed they could do that. And it was Gabby, of all people, opening the scoring, which I think he's only the third Italian defender for Milan. It's these stupid stats, right? To score, but whatever. And they keep rolling. And now it's, you know, spit or get off the pot, as they say. Group D is finally poised, Jules, with everything decided on the last day. And it's thanks to Eintracht's 2-1 win over Marseille.
Yeah, it was. They started early. Kamada, great ball by Ndika. And then Randal Kolo Muani, Paris born and bred, who scores the winner against Marseille. From who Guendouzi, also Paris born and bred, scored, by the way, earlier to make it 1-1. It was really good game, I thought. Intense. Had a lot of things. But for Marseille, this is a big opportunity missed, because now, for them to go through, they will need to beat Spurs at the Velodrome next week.
I believe there's a partial stadium closure as well, right?
As well, yeah. One of the curvas is closed, so not ideal. Napoli were already through, of course, but still beat Rangers 3-0. And Gio Simeone made history, Gab.
He made history. So another one of those like stats, which I find really stupid. But it's significant because he is the second Argentine player in the history of the Champions League to score four goals in his first four Champions League games. I would never mention such an irrelevant stat, except for one thing, is who is the first?
His dad.
It's his dad, amazing. Diego Simeone. And as our colleague David Cartledge tweeted out, wouldn't it be cool if Giuliano Simeone gets in the Atletico first team, not this year, but next year, and becomes the third Argentine player to score four goals in his first four.
It would be a big achievement.
It's so weird. We take Messi so for granted. I know. So like, well, surely it's Messi, right? But no. Simeone played really, really well. Spalletti rightly resting the big guns. Zielinski, Kvaratskhelia, Victor Osimhen. Leo Ostergaard, who's played very little, but I think is a tremendous player. And kind of
scored?
Like,
is he like 16th player to score for Napoli this season or something like that?
16 players to score for Napoli already this season. 12 in a game.
Hence the jumper, you know, like
12 games in a row undefeated. It's just a dream. You almost wonder if there isn't a man named Diego upstairs possibly pulling a few strings.
I love that.
From up on high. Celtic and Shakhtar Donetsk battle to a 1-1 draw, which means Shakhtar can still qualify if they beat Leipzig at home in match day 6. Well, not at home, but in Warsaw, their temporary home.
Yeah, what an incredible story would it be if they qualified, really, in kind of a tough group, really, to be fair.
Well, and by the way, they're playing Leipzig, so it is a total like good versus evil, versus darkness.
Everybody would be like behind Shakhtar, please go, Mudrik score, please. I mean, I felt a bit for Celtic because I thought they played well again, but didn't get the points that maybe they deserve. We saw maybe one of the misses of the season in Young Sikan missing.
It looked like he didn't know if he wanted to control the ball
or go right foot, left foot. I know, it was crazy. And then you saw on his face, but we saw another great goal by Mudrik, who's clearly has something very, very special. And then I think all be waiting for that
Shakhtar Leipzig okay. game now.
You have to buy shares in the future of a player.
Yeah.
Which Eastern European 21-year-old do you choose? Mudrik or Kvaratskhelia?
Oh, that's tough.
Who's got the higher ceiling?
Oh, that's tough. That is really tough. That is really tough.
I think right now I would take Kvaratskhelia.
Yeah, me too, probably.
Higher ceiling, I don't know. Mudrik.
Yeah, I wonder which one of the two can play in different positions. I think maybe Mudrik has that kind of versatility kind of ceiling higher up than
somebody,
Maradona, maybe.
One of our editors referred to him as the Ukrainian Neymar. Do you see the parallel with Neymar and Mudrik?
I see in a way, although he's a far more direct player than Neymar is. I think everything he does really is like try to go vertical and forward straight away, running.
Certainly compared to 21-year-old Neymar. And yeah. I think, honestly, other than the fact that their names both have six letters in them, I'm not sure that. Yeah, I think it ends there.
Guy, you bigged up Bruges all season long, and you were right, to be fair, and I gave you credit. But they let you down at home to Porto on Tuesday, on Wednesday, losing 4-0. And for Sergio Conceição, it's a win that sends him and his team to the round of 16.
Okay, so it would have been a different story if my main man, Mr. Champions League, Hans Anakin, had converted his penalty. Well done, Diogo Costa. I think he's been phenomenal in this tournament.
Wow.
I think Bruges ultimately, we're through. We're done. We don't care, right? They've achieved their goal.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think it's important from the Porto end. Obviously, we know what Sergio Conceição has been through, the criticism he received, the attack on his car when you know his son was in the car with him and whatever. To be able to kind of turn it around, get Porto back on track is pretty, pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Very dead rubber at the Sanchez Pizjuan, it turned out, but Sevilla beat Copenhagen 3-0. Jules, is it the Sampaoli effect?
Well, it kind of is, although it was a terrible game. The first half, I even thought Copenhagen were the better team, to be fair. They could have taken the lead.
Copenhagen playing all the teenagers again, right?
Yeah, and they you know, like Mohamed Darami, I think he's a very talented boy, promising boy. Maybe we hyped him a bit too early.
Yeah, his Icelandic kid is pretty good too.
Yeah, Haraldsson, but he showed glimpse of the talent. In the end, Sevilla were too good. Gregor Baisco, by the way, his first one in a Sevilla shirt, but for nothing because they're out already. Both.
And now they are instant favourites to win the Europa League because that's how they roll.
For the 25th time in the history. Ralf Rangnick gave an interview to Bild in Germany where he said that he asked for a bunch of players last January to be signed by United but was told that United were only going to spend for the new manager, so not for him, basically. So Nkunku, Haaland, Morata, Gvardiol, Diaz, Vlahovic. I mean, he could have said, you know, Pele, Maradona, because he seemed to name, everybody, every man and his dog.
I mean, these were all players, I think, other than Haaland, for the reasons we know, that United could have signed if they really wanted to.
Yeah.
I think, first of all, this kind of confirms what we've said all along, which some people stupidly denied. That whole thing where he was the manager for 6 months and then he's a technical director consultant for 2 years afterwards is all nonsense. It's all stupid.
Really.
It's just a big made-up lie, just a way to pay him more money.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with them saying, no, well, we're not going to commit money on these kinds of players. These are all expensive players,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
These are all, Morata maybe a little bit less so.
Others, you would sign them for any managers in the world, right? Because you need to improve.
I don't think so. Haaland, yes. But
and
I don't think... What?
And Kunku?
Maybe I have a manager who plays a system who likes somebody else.
Oh,
there's finite resources.
Vardiol? What would you know about Vardiol?
Well, because I already have somebody who plays this position who's a lot better. No, I'm just kidding. Look, I don't... I can understand the club saying, all right, we've thrown money around. We're going to be more methodical about this. I don't have a problem with United deciding that. I do wonder a little bit if they had signed maybe, because from what I was told, he also suggested, fine, if you're not going to sign these big boys, can we get some loan players in certain positions or, you know, cheaper options to strengthen the squad so we can make a run at the top four? And they didn't do that. And I thought that was stupid
because
I think, you know, United would have had a chance, like a real chance, to finish in the top four last season. And I think they blew it because they didn't give Rangnick the tools to need even for that one sort of short-term goal.
Yeah.
Unai Emery is the new Aston Villa manager. Jules, should Villa fans get excited? Or should Villarreal fans burn him in effigy because he walks out in mid-season like some kind of Judas?
Well, I don't think they should. The Villarreal fans should do. He almost left last season, if you remember, to go to Newcastle. I think he was really tempted. In the end, it didn't happen. So I think the writing was a little bit on the wall, whether even if he was doing a decent job, let's call it that way, at Villarreal, I think he always had those kind of temptation to leave, even if he's halfway through the season. For Villa, I think he's a really good manager. I know he hasn't always worked out at times for him in bigger clubs. I think this is a better environment for him.
Well, you say better environment. Are Villarreal great this season? I mean, at the start of the season, you're like, oh, Villarreal are going to finish top four. Their squad is so good. And like,
no, okay. It's been a tough start of the season. They haven't played well.
Yeah.
But last season, you saw in the Champions League. The season before, you saw in the Europa League. What he doesn't... He's more of a cup guy and a tournament guy than a league guy, for sure. But I think he's got a really good squad. I think he will improve them in terms of structure, in terms of discipline. I think you will see an impact, I hope, if his English has improved, if his English is better, if his message goes through. I think this is a good signing.
Yeah, I think obviously he's a good signing because Aston Villa don't have a manager right now. So obviously,
yeah, but he's better than Gerrard, right?
Yes.
Who would you pick between him and Gerrard?
I think he is better than Steven Gerrard. Yeah, no question about that. He is an improvement on him. Whether he's the kind of guy that I would say I'm going to entrust you to a longer-term project to get Villa back, I'm not 100% sure, because I think he does have serious limitations. I think his style of football, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, we pick on Allegri and Simeone all the time for playing defensive football when it doesn't work. Unai Emery, fundamentally, you know, if we had to make a continuum of where we stand, and you have Pep or whatever at one end, and you have Cholo at the other end, he's much closer to this side. I know he's versatile, he can do both, whatever, but he is fundamentally a safety-first guy and has become more and more that, I think, over the years.
Yeah, we'll see. And Emery moves mean that he will be replaced at Villarreal by Quique Setién. I guess we'll see a different brand of football.
We're going to see.
So the Villarreal fans should be excited, I guess.
Yeah, look, I don't think Unai Emery was particularly popular because people made such a big deal of what he sounds like when he talks in English, which I think, you know, is silly. Like, not everybody's okay for languages, right? But he doesn't sound great speaking Spanish either, because he gets lost in clauses and subclauses, and he's difficult to follow. Setién is the kind of guy who will bring a lot of excitement. Is he too buccaneering for them, for this team? I don't know. I hope Setién learned, by the way. It's a different set of challenges, obviously, at Villarreal relative to Barcelona.
Yeah, for sure he would have.
I think he's grown. I think he's spent time away, learned a lot, and I think he's a smart guy. I'd love to see him back in the big term.
Yeah, it'd be good. It'd be good.
Manchester United have been charged by the FA for failing to control their players in the game against Chelsea Saturday.
No.
It's a second straight game in which they face such a charge after Tottenham in midweek. In fact, I don't even remember. What do they do against Tottenham in midweek? It's a game they won, right?
Yeah.
I read that it's a second round. Whatever.
No.
Is this a concern, or is it just
pay the fine? I don't think so. I'll tell you what. I hate those being charged by the FA for failing to control your players. I really hate it. I believe it only happens in England, not in other leagues. I don't really know why. Sometimes there's a scuffle, sometimes it's argy-bargy. But that doesn't mean you didn't control your players. It's just sometimes in the heat of the moment, in a game like this, this is what happens. And sometimes it's not your fault either. I hate this rule. I don't know if it's a rule or what this charge is.
This was stupid. So this was on the back of the incident between McTominay and Broja, right?
Yeah, where they gave the penalty.
It's individual players deciding to go and confront the referee. If you as a league decide that this is all the thing, take action against the players. You know, like, the club failing to control. Like, was it more convenient to go? Because all that happens is you give them a fine, right? I mean...
I don't think
this is a meaningful disincentive, frankly.
Sticking with United, Gab, Cristiano Ronaldo is back in a few hours and we're playing the Europa League game. He's back at training.
Sheriff Tiraspol, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Who just like the manager, by the way. And sporting coach Ruben Amorim was asked about Cristiano. He says they would love to have him back at Sporting, just can't afford his wages.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Thank you. If Cristiano really wants to go back, he knows what to do then.
Look, I think if Cristiano wants to play every week and wants to be happy in scoring, he's got two paths to do it. He's either going to go and change Eric Ten Hag's mind, but you only need to look at Erik ten Hag to say, this is not Mr. Wishy-Washy who changes his mind very easily.
No, definitely
right?
not.
He's not Uncle
Erik.
So
that's not going to happen.
Put it that way. Oh, by the way, it's just got nothing to do with everything. Somebody posted a picture of like four of the last five Ajax managers.
Yeah, all the same.
They're all carbon copies of each other.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
In terms of their appearance.
Yeah, completely. I mean, Arne Slot has to be the next one after Schroeder. anyway.
But yeah, look, if you want to play every week, if you want to have fun, you want to play, Sporting is an option for you. I don't know if he's going to wait to see if they advance in the Champions League or whatever.
Yeah, true.
It means you will need to leave money on the table.
Yeah.
United will need to leave money on the table because they made a stupid deal when they signed you.
Surely it's as simple as that, right? Surely he's ready to do that, and so are United.
I think he is ready. Maybe he wants to go somewhere else. I think it's big that he said, though. And the reason this is different, because I think there are a lot of managers, and I've talked about this before, who look at this, you know, managers of top clubs who say, oh yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo, great player, but I have a system, I'm a system manager, he's going to upset the apple cart if he comes here, right? So I don't want to deal with that. But here you have Ruben Amorim saying, you know what? I have the little Marcus Edwards up front. I'll find room for you, Cristiano. You know, I like that fact.
Yeah.
Now the ball's in his court, and maybe somebody else will come out of the woodwork.
It would be so nice.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The FA have closed their investigation into the incident between Jordan Henderson and Gabriel when Liverpool played Arsenal. I guess we'll never know what happened.
No, unless they release what they found so far, which they won't do. So, I don't know. Let's say that maybe, as we've said before, I think, with Nathan, lost in translation. Clearly, Henderson said something. Gabriel heard something else. That's what Henderson is saying. That's what Gabriel is saying. I don't know.
Trust the process in this. I'm guessing
you have
that
to.
Both
you
parties are, well, Gabriel, I assume, is the aggrieved party here, must be satisfied with the outcome. Otherwise, he would let us know, I presume.
Yeah, I guess so. Shakhtar Donetsk CEO Dmitry Palkin says that FIFA should kick Iran out of the World Cup and replace them with Ukraine. Gab, this isn't going to happen, right?
No, it's not going to happen.
It's a good idea, but no.
No, it's a bad idea because it's a stupid idea. I have all the love in the world and support for Dmitry Palkin and the people of Ukraine and what they're going through with a war and everything. And obviously he's annoyed specifically with Iran because there's reports
that they're
saying using
weapons,
drones and weapons in Russia. But you can't just, FIFA can't make these decisions, right?
No.
If the UN decides to go and sanction Iran, whatever reason, the way they did with Russia, fine. Then we can have a conversation about it. But then also maybe we look to see why is it Ukraine that gets to go and not somebody else?
Yeah, exactly.
I think right now, especially given what's going on in Iran, with a lot of men and women taking the streets demanding human rights, civil rights, having a go at it, it would not be very smart to go and give the Iranian government another excuse to crack down. So I think you need to see. Like I said, max sympathy, max admiration for what he's doing, but this to me seems a little bit kind of like out of thin air, you know?
Yeah.
We gave Todd Boehly a hard time about his lack of recruitment specialists, sacking Thomas Tuchel, you know what, like a week after you gave him all this money to spend. But credit to him after, you know, failed approaches with Michael Edwards and a host of others. A whole bunch of people are now on their way. Now, I just say, like, I do not know any of these people personally.
Yeah.
I know three of them by reputation.
Yeah.
So Lawrence Stewart is joining from Monaco, and he's going to be, I guess, the
technical director.
The technical director.
Yeah.
Somebody named Paul Winstanley is joining from Brighton.
Yeah.
He's the guy who I presume replaced Dan Ashworth.
Yeah, and knows Graham Potter really well from many years. So I guess this one is a Graham Potter signing.
Somebody named Joe Shields is coming.
From
Southampton. And who's the guy who's been in the job. He is really, he's some kind of savant. That's how he's been described to me. And Christopher Vivelle, who was part of the Red Bull organization.
Yeah, who's credited with some big signings.
Well, But can you just tell me about Lauren Stewart here?
Who's going to do what? We've said that before.
Okay, because, all right. So Lauren Stewart was in Monaco, and prior to that, he was a Red Bull.
Yeah.
Paul Mitchell's the man in Monaco, right? So was he like Mitchell's sidekick?
Yeah. So Mitchell had a big, big role. I think Stewart was overlooking the relationship, which I think is quite interesting for Chelsea, of Monaco and their satellite club in Belgium. Which is
Cercle Bruges. Right? This is bad Bruges, by the way. There's good Bruges, and this is not
Club Bruges
so
are the good
Bruges.
One. Cercle Bruges are the bad one. That the one that Monaco also own, which would make me think that Lauren Stewart has been brought in at Chelsea to oversee maybe a few satellite clubs being bought by Todd Boehly and his people, which would make it interesting. And then his role, Stewart's role, would be to oversee everything, the loans that you make to your parent clubs, etc. For the others, I guess they're all great minds, they know football really well, they all have their network, they all have their stats, they all have their things like that. And it's about gelling and bonding together to make the right call. Because if, you know, one wants a player in a position, but the other one wants another player in that position, then who gets the nods and who goes with who? And I think it could be
I think these things generally work when ultimately there is a hierarchy, whether the person in charge is Stewart or somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, you get input from different sources and then one person kind of carries the can.
Yeah.
But like it's good. We said it all along. They need this. We told them you should do this, and now they're doing this.
They've got a bit of time to prepare for the January transfer window now as well. So, the Australian PFA released a powerful video message about Qatar 2022. Gab, what did they have to say?
So, look, they said the usual things about you know, the importance of preserving labor rights for migrant workers, the importance of LGBT plus issues, as they call them. But I think they did it in a way that was informed and not grandstanding, right? They went and they spoke with labor unions. They spoke with Amnesty International. They spoke with migrant workers. They spoke with the Supreme Committee of Qatar. They spoke to FIFA. So they made sure they understood all sides of the issues. And then they came out with their statement. And they said, look, you know, we don't feel that this can be ignored. They reiterated calls for what I think is one of the single most important things you can do, at least on the migrant workers front, is set up migrant workers resource centers with, you know, legal advice center with Qatari lawyers, local lawyers, that's well funded, that's going to stick around after the World Cup. Because when the circus moves out of town, nobody looks anymore. And we've seen this happen in many places. So if you're going to come out and take a stand, this is the way to do it. An informed, intelligent stand after you do your research and your homework. Well done to the Australian PFA. Liga president Javier Tebas continues to troll Paris Saint-Germain, Jules. He says they need to be punished for all their spending. It's more than half a billion in the last couple of years. And that £10 million found for Nasser would be like a cup of coffee.
Of course. An expensive coffee. Surely Italian coffee, Gab. Every time he can, I think it's the Sportel in Monaco at the moment, and that's where he spoke to L'Equipe. He was so happy to do it. I mean, if I was him, I'd be a bit more worried that I only have one Spanish club in the Champions League last 16 for the first time ever in the Champions League, by the way. Then
we were so used to Spanish teams dominating Europe.
Not anymore. So Javier, maybe just, you know, look at your own league for a little bit.
Yeah, but the other thing I don't get about this is, dude, you're on the, if I'm not mistaken, he's a league representative on the UEFA executive committee, right?
Yeah.
There's the old version of financial fair play, which will still apply for this season. And then next season, you have the new version, right? Rather than going on and on in public, like, punish them, punish this. Tell me what you're doing. Talk to me about these rules. Talk to me about the need for transparency. Maybe campaign for transparency within it. And say, like, not just, oh, they made a ton of losses. How did they make them? What rules could they have broken? Explain it. It seems to me like you're playing to the audience, right?
Yeah.
And this is what happens with both sides. This is what really bugs me when it comes to financial regulations, right? On the one hand, you know, you get people, oh, like, you know, petrodollars, City, PSG, they're all cheats. On the other side, they're like, oh, look, you know, they're all corrupt, UEFA's against us, blah, 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 you know. I know,
you're right.
UEFA and CONMEBOL have confirmed another finalissima, Gab, April 6, 2023, England's women against Brazil's women. So the Euro winners against the
Copa America winners.
That's right. The Finalissima, that story tradition, which of course dates all the way back to June 1st, 2022. I remember the date well because it was also at Wembley. I was supposed to go to the game, but I caught COVID in Paris.
In Paris, enough, yes, of course.
At the Champions League final. I think it's great. I think this is kind of slightly probably more significance in the men's game. You're the expert on women's football because I know Brazil are good, but I'm assuming a proper Finalissima might be UEFA against the CONCACAF gold champions of CONCACAF, no?
Yeah, well, I think the idea is South America against Europe, right? Which is the men's version, the women's version of the men ones.
Brazil are a good side, right?
Yeah, and we've just had a USA v. England only a few weeks ago. So you can't have like...
But that wasn't a Finalissima. This is the Finalissima.
Yeah, but I want to see that game. That's going to be good. I'll be there.
It's been revealed that there were more football-related tweets on Twitter in 2021 than American football, basketball, and baseball combined. Jules, this made news in the U.S., but are you surprised?
Not at all, no. I mean, I don't know. Why would you be surprised?
That the biggest sport in the globe should also be the biggest one on a global social media platform?
Especially considering, against sports like American football and baseball, who are not only played in the U.S., I know, but mostly played in Europe, mostly followed.
Yeah,
I love it. Come on.
Thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yeah, exactly. Palmeiras won the kids. Hendrik, and I don't think this is the last time you hear his name on this show, became the youngest player to score in the history of Brazil's Serie A, 16 years and 97 days of age against Athletic Paranaense. And Gab, he even trod Erling Haaland as well.
He's coming for you. He's coming for you. Erling Haaland, he's coming for you. Now, look, he basically trolled him. He didn't really troll him. I think you could say it was an homage to Erling Haaland.
Homage as well.
You know what? He probably grew up watching, idolizing Erling Haaland.
Yeah, he was 10 when
he basically copied Erling Haaland's goal celebration. I think it's great. We've talked about him before. What you don't want to do is put too much on them. You don't want them to turn into those tennis stars from the 80s who win the U.S. Open when they're 14 and are Jennifer Capriati by the time they're 18, whatever. I presume he's got good people around. They know what they're doing. The transfer hype is already going with this kid.
Yeah.
Let's let him go. I hope he stays at least until he's 20, 21 years old in Brazil. I mean, you don't think we'll see him at the World Cup, do you?
I don't think so, although I would love to. I mean, Ronaldo, Brazilian Ronaldo was very, very young in 94. So
and didn't play, but
didn't play, but still he's part of the experience, I guess.
Right, that brings us to an end. But Jules, we got to come back on Monday because there is a big, big weekend ahead, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.